Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order today, February 22nd, at around 1 o'clock. We will start out by calling the roll.
Senator Findley? Senator Riley?
Present by video.
Senator Findley, okay. Senator Riley?
Present by video.
Senator Wagner?
Present by video.
Vice Chair Boqvist?
Present on audio.
Madam Chair Burdick?
Present by video. Okay, we will start today to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 137. As you'll recall, we had a hearing on this previously, but a lot of the advocates did not get a chance or were not aware of that hearing. So we.
Senator Findley, okay. Senator Riley?
Present by video.
Senator Wagner?
Present by video.
Hold on.
Present on audio.
Madam Chair Burdick?
Present by video. Why did we take roll again?
It would, the audio was playing back, I think.
Okay. So what do I need to do over, Chris? Do I need to open the public hearing again?
I don't think so. I'm waiting for Donita to chime in if there's any technical problem. I think we just had some weird loop there, though.
Okay. I think it was just a weird audio loop. There was nothing happening on my end, just heard it.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a public hearing open on Senate Bill 137. And as I said before the audio loop started, this is our second hearing because some of the advocates did not, some of the people testifying in favor of this bill and the Dash One Amendment did not know about the last hearing. So we scheduled another one for them. So we will take the advocates first at this hearing, and then we'll take some other witnesses who are opposed in the last part of the hearing. So we will start out with the summary of the bill.
Okay, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. Yeah, Senate Bill 137, the introduced version of the measure, this is the standard reconnect measure. The committee sees this bill annually, but it is updating Oregon's connection date to Internal Revenue Code. The Dash One Amendment is a proposal to disconnect from three policy provisions of the Federal CARES Act that came into effect last year. The committee heard about this on the February 3rd meeting, but just really quickly, it's the three provisions are the business interest deduction, net operating loss carryback, and the business loss limitation.
Okay, and our first witness today is Representative Khan Pham. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boqvist, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Khan Pham, and I am the representative for House District 46. I am honored to testify today in support of Senate Bill 137, a bill to disconnect Oregon from federal CARES Act tax breaks. Oregon's revenue system, I sit on the House Revenue Committee, and I am passionate about it as the vice chair because I really see Oregon's revenue system as a place to reflect our values as a state and a way for us to choose our way as a state, to choose what we want to encourage or discourage and what our priorities are as a state. However, right now, whenever Congress creates new tax breaks for the rich or for corporations, Oregon automatically copies the same wasteful subsidies because Oregon is automatically connects to federal tax law. So in this case, these tax breaks for the rich and corporations drain resources from Oregon's schools and from our essential services. The only way to stop these new tax breaks is for the Oregon legislature to vote to disconnect from them. So Senate Bill 137 would disconnect Oregon from some of the worst designed provisions in the Federal CARES Act. Oregon has a choice to stop the state from duplicating these three costly tax breaks, the business loss limitation, the net operating loss expansion, and business interest deductions, which will pull nearly $100 million out of our general fund. The most egregious of these policies repeals the limit on how much certain pass-through businesses can offset business losses against non-business income. So this particular provision only benefits a tiny sliver of Oregon taxpayers, the vast majority of whom make more than $1 million per year. So these millionaires will collect $9 out of every $10 of the tax breaks. That is huge. Too much of these CARES Act dollars are going to go to businesses who are doing just fine or even better under COVID conditions. Even with this proposed bill fixed, these millionaires will still receive the benefits of their federal taxes. This is also a racial justice issue. We know who disproportionately owns these pass-through businesses, and the communities of color who have suffered disproportionately in this recession are not going to benefit. These tax breaks fail the test of helping those who need it most, and they perpetuate inequality. We have an opportunity to do better. If we disconnect, we can actually invest those dollars in COVID response at the local level and recovery in housing and education, mental health, wildfire recovery, and other longstanding needs that have just been exacerbated under the pandemic. The Oregon legislature never vetted these tax breaks, and these mainly benefit the well-off, and now we have the opportunity to do better. I urge this committee to consider the merits of Senate Bill 137 and support Oregon disconnecting from these portions of the CARES Act. Thank you.
And for the record, you're testifying in favor of the Dash One Amendment. Is that correct? You're on mute.
Excuse me. Yes. To clarify, I am testifying in support of the Dash One Amendment for Senate Bill 137. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Findley, you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Chair Burdick. So, Representative Pham, thank you for your testimony. I have two questions, a two-part question. Question one is, Legislative Fiscal Office provided information on this, that this is a budget-neutral amendment and a budget-neutral bill over a two-year period of time. So there will be no tax breaks after that, and there will be no big breaks that you're referring to. The second question, part of it is, have you read the most recent Oregon Association of Oregon CPAs who are opposed to this bill for a variety of reasons? About the only people that will make money on this are the accountants and the CPAs who will redo all the tax returns. The bottom line is it'll be budget neutral over a couple year period. So why would we do this? You're still on mute.
Representative Pham, you're still on mute.
Excuse me. So, Senator Findley, I just want to make sure I understand your question. You said that the CPAs are opposed to it, and you said that it was going to be revenue neutral. My understanding, and I know the LRO is still calculating the revenue gains to our general fund, but they came up with some December estimates, which were about $100 million for the biennium. But I know that they've actually changed it and will be promoting new numbers at the more upcoming revenue forecast. But this is not revenue neutral. And I think, as I mentioned in my testimony, if we don't disconnect, I'm concerned of potential budget holes that we would need to fill because these are unexpected tax breaks that we need in our state to fund critical social programs.
Follow up,
please.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, if that's the case, and I have no reason to believe it's not, the information that we were provided and that is in OLIS to give us our information on this from shows that it's a budget neutral issue. There are two sets of books or two sets of rules for this bill. I question what the real story is, and I would like LFO to provide updates to why they're talking about a budget neutral bill when it sounds like it's a $100 million a year bill.
Chris, maybe you could just quickly elaborate how these work and how that conclusion might have been reached.
Sure. So Madam Chair, members of the committee, Chris Allenack, Legislative Revenue Office, and Kyle's also on the call here as well as Kate. The provisions here adjust. There's a timing aspect to them so that there can be a revenue loss in this year, and that's offset by revenue gains in future years, because you have the bucket of net operating losses, for example, and under pre-CARES Act law, those would be claimed in the future. Under the CARES Act, taxpayers could go back in time for up to 5 years. So that moves some of the revenue impact into the current biennium. So these revenue losses pre-CARES Act would have been used in future years, causing revenue losses in those years as businesses use them. By moving them forward, it moved the revenue loss into the current biennium. And because in the future those losses wouldn't be there, it provides a revenue gain in future years. Now there are, so that's the broad concept of the timing aspect to it. There is the question of how much of those losses will be used in the future and the timing aspect, and in some cases, if they will be used at all in the future. Those are some of the outstanding issues. But it's a timing aspect, and a similar situation occurs to the business loss limitation, which disconnecting from those feeds into the NOLs, and then similarly for the business interest deduction, there's a timing aspect to it. So there is a revenue loss in the current biennium that adjusts over time.
Okay, Senator Boqvist, you had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to, just as we go forward and try and figure this out, I want to ask the same question to the good representative along with the two senators so we have a working basis. And it's actually a simple question rather than more complex, as Chris put out and Senator Finley. And that is would we prefer to give money back in a kicker this biennium, or would we prefer to have additional revenues in the out? That's really the two choices here. And I'm just looking for the representative and the senators who come on and whether they'd prefer to have money now that ends up in the kicker, or they would rather prefer to have money and revenue in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. We will move on. As Senator Golden, I think I saw your picture. Yes, I did see your picture. We will call Senator Golden next. You're on mute.
Yes, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Boqvist, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jeff Golden. I represent Senate District 3, Rogue Valley and Southern Oregon in the state Senate. I really appreciate an opportunity to spend, I think, just a very few minutes today in support of Senate Bill 137-1. Leave you plenty of time to hear the factual substance of this bill. You've already heard some. It is complex. Today is the first time I've heard about revenue neutrality. I do understand there's some different ideas about the amount of revenue to be realized and when. But what I've chosen to ask to see you about today is the possibility that we could surprise some people on this issue. There are expectations that if this legislation moves forward out of this committee, it will follow a predictable partisan script that's based on the stereotypes that Democrats only want to increase revenue and Republicans only want to cut taxes, and we end up with a party line vote. I think that would be lazy thinking that lets Oregonians down, and there's another possibility. I think if we're thoughtful about this bill, we could see it as the right vehicle to achieve a goal that every one of us, Democrat and Republican, want to achieve. And I remember the moment where that idea came to me. It was on a Zoom call about 2 months ago that was focused on economic development, when a couple of Republican legislators spoke to their deep concern over whether family-owned restaurants in their districts were going to survive the COVID recession and how critically they needed more help. They added that the big chain restaurants in their districts that were likely receiving some form of government relief seemed like they were thriving, maybe doing better business than ever, but where is the help for the little guy and who's going to help them? We could, but not. It's the odds of that are greatly reduced if we sit back passively and watch the CARES Act tax breaks channel around $100 million. Again, that takes some analysis of general fund dollars to very large businesses and their executives who were not hurt by the COVID recession, including some who had banner years last year. The top executives of those thriving chain restaurants down the block, not the mom and pop cafes that have our colleagues worried, would get the lion's share of the relief. And the instrument that we have to turn that around and get the relief where it's needed is disconnection as provided in this bill. I would favor adding language to this bill to make sure that that happens. It commits that saved revenue would go to business grants well targeted to businesses who have really been hammered by this pandemic. It seems to me, Madam Chair, that opposition to this bill has to be based on one of two beliefs. Number one would be that the CARES Act did a good job of targeting tax relief to businesses most hurt by COVID. And I don't think it takes more than about 10 or 15 minutes of studying the data to know that that's not true. And as an aside, I'm pretty sure you'll hear testimony today implying that it must be a pretty good tax plan because Congress passed the CARES Act overwhelmingly on a bipartisan basis. I think you're going to hear the B word more than once in the next 90 minutes. And I think what we're supposed to take from that is that these tax breaks have been endorsed and vetted by smart people who span the political spectrum. So who are we to challenge a consensus decision like that? I hope you won't give credit to that argument because a large bipartisan majority did not endorse these tax breaks. A large bipartisan majority looking into the abyss of a national economic collapse and the literal possibility of starvation in the streets very quickly endorsed a huge omnibus package that included provisions that they had to swallow as much as they disliked them. And these new high-end tax breaks were some of those. As you well know, that's how legislating sometimes works. So the first reason for opposition would be these tax breaks are well targeted to COVID-damaged businesses. That's easily disproved. The second would be that creating new tax breaks now for businesses is a good idea, whether or not they've been hit hard by COVID. And even if doing that makes it less likely that we'll be able to provide much help for businesses that have been hammered by the pandemic. I want to think that's not true, but I can't figure out other honest reasons for opposing the bill. Madam Chair, I think this bill plainly increases chances that we'll relieve the suffering of Oregon businesses brought to their knees by COVID, because we can design tax relief much more accurately than K Street lobbyists who know little and care less about which Oregon businesses have been laid low in our communities. That is the reason several other states, some with Republican legislative majorities, have already disconnected from these tax breaks. I think our constituents are looking at us to avoid a worn-out partisan battle and do what it takes to get the help where it's most needed. Let's not let our small businesses fail when we have this obvious chance to help save them. I appreciate the time for my comments, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I see no questions. So our next witness is Senator Dembrough.
There. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Vice Chair Boqvist, members of the Finance and Revenue Committee, I'm Michael Dembrough, and I represent Senate District 23, that's much of Northeast, Southeast Portland, Park Rose, Maywood Park, in the Oregon Senate. And I, too, am here to speak in support of the Dash 1 amendments of Senate Bill 137. And my comments, I think, follow on those of my predecessors. Like many of you, I've been hearing from many, many small business owners since the pandemic began about the devastation that the pandemic has had on their businesses and their livelihood, compounded by many of the measures that we've had to take to keep people safe at this time, and in many parts of the state by the wildfires. I'm proud of us. I'm proud of the legislature for stepping up to help small business owners through our emergency board, in many cases ahead of many other states. The federal government stepped up too with the CARES Act. It created the PPP program, which was well-intentioned, but as I think you know, has had many problems. We as a state again stepped in and filled some of the gaps created in that program. And again, I'm proud of that. Among the efforts that Congress took to address the economic fallout, or in this case, I suspect largely to secure the votes needed to pass the bill, was the set of tax breaks that we're talking about today, which largely benefits higher earning individuals. For states like ours, this federal decision brings with it collateral consequences. As we all know, Congress has the benefit of not having to worry about having a balanced budget. States like ours, of course, do not have that luxury. We have to limit our expenditures to our available revenues. For states like ours, whose revenues come primarily from an income tax and are connected to the federal tax code, as we are, this federal decision requires us to expend limited resources to provide an additional benefit to those already receiving the federal tax benefit. You folks on this committee know more than all of us what a tax expenditure is. It's a decision that we're going to invest our limited dollars in a particular tax break, a particular tax credit, as opposed to investing in something else. It's a choice. That's why the legislature, in its wisdom 10 years ago, created our sunset provision for tax breaks, where periodically we look at our tax breaks and decide, do we affirmatively want this tax credit to go forward, to continue, or do we want it to yield its place to another? For us, each tax break, of course, means less money to invest in other necessary services. So that's what we periodically ask ourselves. Do we want this or do we want that? I would say that if we need to make a choice, it should be in favor of those Main Street small businesses that are being hammered by our current challenges, that I think most of us would agree need the help most right now in this current biennium. So I think it's incumbent on us to ask ourselves this question. If it were our decision to create new tax breaks, are these the tax breaks that we would create at this time? If it were up to us to create a new program, looking at all the priorities that we face right now, is this the one that we would prioritize? Is it this tax break that we would be supporting? Or if it were an existing tax expenditure that was up for renewal and reconfirmation, is this the one that you would support, as opposed, say, to one that would reduce the tax burdens for mainstream small business owners? If the answer to either of these is no, I would not create this new program, or I would not continue this as an existing program, then you should reject this tax expenditure by supporting this disconnect bill and look at where you would direct the dollars that would otherwise have been spent. I believe you would and should direct those scarce resources not to these particular tax breaks, but to the Main Street shops, restaurants, and services that are so desperately in need. Other states have done this, colleagues, and I believe that so should we. And that's why I urge you to support this Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 137. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, we will move on to our panels now. Our first panel will be Lori Wimmer, Daniel Hauser, and Bob Estabrook. And I have them in that order. If you want to do a different order, just jump in. So we'll start with Lori Wimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing the 41,000 members of the Oregon Education Association. And it's my honor to testify today in support of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 137, which would enable Oregon to recover revenue for otherwise that would be foregone due to federal tax law changes. You know, there's a saying that when you're in a hole, stop digging. And when it comes to tax policy in Oregon, this admonition is particularly apt. As with previous recessions, The OEA believes that a good approach in times of revenue shortfall, such as that which we're experiencing now, is to make sure that tax policy doesn't make the state's ability to serve its citizens unnecessarily more difficult. The Dash 1 amendments seem to hew to that common sense. Another reason to support disconnecting to recent federal tax cuts is that Oregon should set its own tax policies, some others have alluded to this, and not take dictation from Washington, D.C. Federal tax law changes are rightly the purview of Congress, but state law tax changes ought not to be. And that's why on a policy level, disconnecting makes sense, with the proviso that individual concepts may be evaluated for extension to Oregon if they're right for our state, but not adopted en banc, as would happen without this amendment. The Legislative Revenue Office tells us that approximately 2,500 to 3,000 personal and corporate taxpayers would be affected by updating, rolling, reconnect, and disconnecting from these recent provisions. That doesn't mean that these taxpayers are disallowed the preferential tax treatment on their federal income tax returns, and this is something I think people don't always grasp. It means only that they won't get a second bite of the apple on their Oregon returns. As Oregon struggles with multiple challenges, the pandemic, economic devastation, reduced revenues, greater needs of its people, wildfires, and the imperatives of a renewed focus on racial justice, legislators have much on their plates as they work to lead us out of a crisis and to recovery and a better future. Now is not the time to unnecessarily produce higher liquidity, as the corporate tax breaks have been characterized, advantaging our most affluent and profitable businesses while cutting services simultaneously to our most vulnerable in this pandemic. Recovering even small amounts of revenue have direct impact not only on the state budget, but also on overall fairness of our system. We must consider the revenue impacts of tax giveaways that seem to advantage the few at the expense of the many, and how that translates to services. In the education sphere, $55 million annually would fund 608 teachers, mental health counselors, school nurses, or other education professionals for full school years. Districts struggling to prepare our schools for safe in-person reopening will need these critical revenues that without your action will be lost to those at the top. And by the way, I would add that if this committee were so inclined to redirect the resources to small business in Main Street, Oregon, we would agree that that is also a critical need. So thank you so much for considering our thoughts on this amendment.
Thank you. We'll take the other two panelists and then open it up for questions. So next is Daniel Hauser.
Yes, thank you, Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee. My name is Daniel Hauser, Tax Policy Analyst for the Oregon Center for Public Policy, and I respectfully submit this testimony in support of Senate Bill 137 with the Dash 1 amendment. This legislation, as amended, would disconnect Oregon, as we've heard, from the CARES Act tax breaks for certain businesses. And while Oregon business owners will still receive these federal tax breaks, Oregon should disconnect and stop the state from duplicating these more wasteful and inequitable breaks. Tax provisions in the CARES Act failed to focus the help on the businesses that are in the greatest need. There was no requirement that a business have any lost revenue or have been harmed by restrictions responding to the pandemic to qualify for these breaks. An investment firm that maybe has seen, you know, glowing and expanding profits over the last year can still reap these benefits on their taxes. So looking at just one of the tax breaks, the business loss limitation, we see exactly who benefits from this policy. Right, Oregon taxpayers who are making more than $1 million each year are expected to collect $9 out of every $10 from the subsidy. These taxpayers reside comfortably within Oregon's richest 1%. These are not the families in greatest need of state support. Many Oregonians are struggling to stay stably housed, to afford care for their children, or keep their struggling businesses afloat. Oregon can use the $84 million in revenue lost to these tax breaks in the 2019-2021 budget period to help the Oregonians in greatest need during these times of layering crises, rather than spending these dollars on a blanket tax break that helps any business owner who qualifies. Lawmakers should also consider, as was mentioned before, the racial equity implications of this policy. Due to racist and discriminatory policy choices past and present, white Oregonians are more likely to be high income than Oregonians of color, and white Oregonians are also more likely to own a business. And while the pandemic has harmed all Oregonians, Oregonians of color have suffered disproportionately. At a time when state revenue is in short supply, the legislature can leave $84 million in tax breaks that mostly help a group of small, disproportionately rich white Oregonians, or lawmakers can disconnect and use those resources to help the Oregonians in the greatest need, a group overrepresented by our communities of color. Senate Bill 137-1 frees up resources to make meaningful investments in recovering from the pandemic while preventing additional tax breaks that benefit the richest Oregonians. I urge you to support Senate Bill 137 with the -1 amendment. And Chair Burdick, I'm wondering if I can spend just a moment longer responding to some of the questions previously asked, if that would be helpful.
Why don't you wait till the end and we'll do that then. How's that? Because that we may get additional questions. Bob Estabrook.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Bob Estabrook for the Oregon School Employees Association. We represent 23,000 educators from across the state, Head Start through community colleges. I really want to make a point on behalf of my folks who typically are not the folks that you would maybe expect to be saying, we need a change in tax policy. I'm here to speak on behalf of my folks who live in places like Amity, Prineville, who are not going to see any benefit from leaving this federal tax policy to affect our state tax policy when they know that their communities need investment and need support. I think it's been, you know, well documented already from folks speaking. Let's have a good sense of what is going on in Oregon communities and where the help is really needed. And we should try to use the blunt instrument of the CARES Act as though it is going to solve the issues that need addressing in Oregon communities. I mean, we should not entertain a false choice that it is whatever was in the CARES Act or nothing in terms of providing good relief to the Oregon communities that need it. I think legislators can well appreciate what is needed in communities from Port Orford to Pendleton, all of these small communities across the state where so many of my members live. They are not going to see a benefit associated with these tax breaks that disproportionately go to those who already have great means. What we need are decisions by the state to invest in our small and more rural communities, places where the pain is real and the relief is needed, but we are not going to be able to provide that relief if we just entrust federal policy that is completely ignorant of the realities of Oregon to try to be the vehicle for that relief. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So now we'll open it up to questions for any of the three members of the panel, Lori Wimmer, Daniel Hauser, or Bob Estabrook. I see no questions. So Mr. Hauser, did you want to respond to one of the earlier questions?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Burdick. I think it's important to keep in mind that we live in a world of tremendous uncertainty, which perhaps goes without statement, particularly as they relate to these amendments. And I think, you know, for example, looking at the kicker and the fear that exists around the kicker, I mean, we won't know for months whether or not the kicker is going to kick. We do, however, know for sure with some certainty that these tax provisions are going to cost the state tens of millions of dollars in our current and our next budget period. And most of the benefits going to flow to higher earning households, right? And I would never advise, you know, legislating in fear of the kicker, although it is exceptionally frightening and keeps me up at night. I think instead we have other options that can help ensure better tax policy moves forward, right? For example, the legislature can vote with a two-thirds majority to stop the kicker from kicking, right? We can invest these dollars now back into our communities in the areas needed most and avoid the kicker from causing those dollars to flow out to taxpayers around the state. Through the kicker. Another option would be to use the resources in the tax code, right? So if we're saving in the current budget period an estimated $84 million, those dollars could be invested in the earned income tax credit and targeted relief for businesses that have actually been hit hardest by the pandemic and can prove such, as well as, you know, potentially exempting a portion of unemployment and compensation from taxation, right? You can do a lot with $80 million in our tax code, which would prevent the kicker from kicking if that was the concern or the fear of the committee. There's also a lot of uncertainty around the net operating losses and how much money we're talking about, right? We do know with certainty that not every single dollar of net operating loss that's created in a tax year will be used in a future tax year, right? Businesses go bankrupt, businesses end up never, you know, turning a profit. There's an assortment of different things that can happen that will prevent a particular business entity from using every dollar of net operating loss they create. So we know that in the long run, there will be a revenue benefit, although the uncertainty is how big that benefit will be. And I think that's certainly something that we'd love to see more information and more education from the Legislative Revenue Office on. So I hope Senators Finley and Boquist that helps respond to some of your questions from earlier in the presentation.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You need to respond to my comments because the revenue forecast is within the next 2 days. That'll be the last operating revenue forecast we have before the one that locks it into stone. So we'll be working off that revenue forecast in the next 2 days. Fact of the matter is, revenue forecast today indicates there would be a kicker, unless, of course, the economy drops out of the bottom, which is a possibility. So the issue at hand is trying to formulate a tax policy that best supports the state of Oregon, like Senator Golden said and Senator Dembrow said. And we're not going to do it all in this bill right here. I'm almost inclined to vote for the bill, which then, you know, reduces revenue if I just wanted to save money, as is indicated by some of the testimony. But that's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is to help finance the state of Oregon. And at the moment, unless LRO can come up with something else, the documentation they provided indicates that we would end up with revenue losses in the future that we would have to backfill somehow. Now, that's just simple statistical fact. So I would urge everybody that we're not going to solve 137A today or in the next week or so. And it, as Senator Golden said and as Senator Dembrow said, we're going to have to put a little bit better package together to figure out how to go forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Boquist. Okay, I see no other questions, so we'll move to our next, well, it might be a panel and it might not. We know for sure that Bennett Mitten is here, and then we had heard that Lamar Wise and Amy Wong wanted to be part of this panel, and I don't, do we have them in the waiting room, Donita?
No, we do not.
Okay, so we will have Bennett Mitten carry the water for this entire panel. Welcome, Mr. Mitten.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Can you hear me?
We can.
Great. For the record, I'm Bennett Mitten. I'm speaking on behalf of Tax Fairness Oregon, a network of volunteers who advocate a rational and equitable tax code. We support the Dash One Amendment. We became alarmed about these CARES Act provisions in the spring, both their cost and distribution to the wealthiest Americans, as the Joint Committee on Taxation confirmed in April. Though LRO has reduced its estimate of the cost of these provisions, our concerns remain. They misallocate limited resources and they threaten the general fund. I was a tax wonk in DC for 3 decades, and I watched the deal making in the Senate Finance Committee, which produced this one. Proponents of these benefits say the CARES Act was bipartisan. As Senator Golden noted, legislation is compromised. Ranking Democrat Wyden championed greater unemployment benefits, and Republicans insisted on the suspension of these limits imposed in 2017. My written statement has brief summaries of them, including one I lobbied on. My 3 points apply to all of them. One, these provisions, as has been noted, provide timing shifts in tax payments, but some revenue will leak. That is, affected taxpayers will never owe it because of changes in their circumstances or in the law. Two, the affected taxpayers are overwhelmingly prosperous. And three, many Main Street businesses may be eligible for refunds on their amended returns, but for most, the amount is so low that it isn't worth their accountant's time. So why did Congress do this? JCT wrote to enhance liquidity. But these benefits are difficult to monetize. A taxpayer who filed an amended return would wait months for a refund. For 2020, a business may count on a tax reduction over the course of the year if it projected a liability. But for businesses losing money in the COVID contraction and therefore without liability, these provisions are unlikely to result in cash. So here's my explanation. The lobbyists who won big tax cuts in 2017 remained at the doors of the Finance Committee, looking to be relieved of these minor limits. Finance members like giving away money as much as other members, but their method is the abstract tax code, not cash. And businesses that pay lots of tax hire lobbyists to hang around their doors. I was one of them. Five states have disconnected from these provisions, and Virginia this week is about to become the sixth. New York has disconnected through 2021, so it doesn't have to worry about what else Congress does, like provide the PPP double dip, which we hope you'll examine. When you do, you will note that the PPP program has already dispensed $7 billion to Oregon businesses, and more is coming. Finally, a word about the business lobby. My written statement that I submitted today includes my analysis of its AstroTurf letter-writing campaign, which led to the submission of more than 200 virtually identical letters for the August 6th hearing record for Chair Nathanson's LC2. Not one letter makes a connection between the CARES Act and the letter writer's business. In 6 months, no witness has testified, here's how I benefit from Congress's gift and how this connection would hurt me. But 24 broad-based organizations endorsed connection in that hearing, many of them citing this basic fact. Since the CARES Act passed 11 months ago, we have witnessed a recovery that has shifted income upwards but left many thousands of Oregonians hanging by a thread, and one out of five is hungry. Remaining connected in the face of this urgent need strikes us as irresponsible. We urge passage of the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Boquist, your hand is still up. Do you have a question, or did you just forget to put your hand down?
I'm forgetful in old age.
I hear you. I feel your pain. Are there other questions? Thank you very much. Okay, now we will move to Jason Orm from the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. Mr. Orm, are you in the room here?
I am in the room, Chair Burdick.
Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here, and Vice Chair Boquist and members of the committee. I don't know if I'm the only one testifying against this measure and specifically against the proposed amendment. I am with the Oregon Society of CPAs, representing 4,100 CPAs involved in that association. I've been practicing tax law for over 30 years. So you have written testimony. Let me explain what this provision does and why we are opposed to the Dash 1 amendment. Specifically, the net operating loss provisions don't affect multinational corporations. They don't. They don't affect taxable corporations or what we call subchapter C corporations. In my 30 years, as I recall, for Oregon purposes, those entities have never been able to carry a net operating loss back. It hadn't been in Oregon law. So this provision now shuts off the ability to carry losses back for Main Street businesses. They're owned by individuals that are passed through entities where those losses come through and then can be deducted on individual returns through carrybacks. Same thing with the business loss limitations. Those don't affect the multinationals. They are there for the pass-through entities. The challenge with disconnecting with federal law, whether you like federal law or not, is it increases complexity. Some believe that tax accountants like me love complexity and that we ought to make more of it because our bills just go up. Our bills do go up, but the problem with that is the taxpayers really don't like our bills when they go up. They're already big enough. If this were to pass, we have Oregon taxpayers who a year ago, when CARES came out, filed net operating loss carryback claims with the Department of Revenue. Those amended returns have been processed. Those refunds, along with related interest, have been issued. They're in the hands of taxpayers. If this passed, those taxpayers would now have to engage someone like me to amend the return again. They would then be required to repay tax and interest. This provision is also effective for 2020. We are just starting to see information come in for 2020. it allows taxpayers, again, Main Street businesses, to carry those losses back. How big is the benefit? If you have a restaurant who's been struggling to survive, some restaurants have done great, the larger ones, but the smaller ones struggling to survive, and they've got a $100,000 loss this year, which wouldn't be out of the realm of reality, carryback is a $9,000 benefit to them. Yes, they're going to pay somebody like me several hundred dollars to carry that back, to prepare the returns and carry that back, but that puts money in their pocket and does so. Department of Revenue has been pretty good, I would say, within about 3 months of filing those returns. So this isn't a multinational issue, a multinational corporation issue. It's not. It doesn't affect them. This affects Main Street businesses. Anytime we disconnect from federal law, it increases the already amazing complexity the taxpayers deal with. On behalf of the Oregon Society of CPAs, we urge you to oppose this measure as stated in the amendment to the original SB 137. I'd be happy to answer questions if there are any.
Thank you. Would you address the business loss limitation specifically, how that would work in terms of if we disconnected from that? Because there is pretty compelling evidence that really does benefit the very highest income owners.
So what that provision does is, Senator Burdick, let's say, for example, that you've got a business and that the business been a bad year and you lost $500,000 this year. With that provision coming in with the 2017 federal bill, it means that you can only deduct $250,000 of that loss that you've incurred. It's money that you've got into the business. You can only deduct $250,000 of that loss against other income this year. The rest carries forward. So by disconnecting, as the federal law did, from that provision, now you have a $500,000 loss that under the NOL provisions you could carry back right now in Oregon, and that would mean at least $45,000 refund to you to plug back into your business.
But you would have to have a very high income earner, a separate earner, or I guess you could have W-2 wages of your own, but you'd have to have a separate flow of income to deduct that against at a very high level, correct?
Well, yes and no. In the year of the loss, that's absolutely true. But if that loss is allowed as a net operating loss, and it is carried back under current law, let's say that the business made $200,000 a year for the past 5 years, reasonable amount. Now you've got $500,000 to carry back against that income that you'd had in the prior years that frankly generated the capital that was in the business for you to have the loss.
So does the limitation apply to the previous years? If, for example, we disconnected from that and the current limitations were still in effect, then that would limit it to like $250,000 for the carryback years?
So what that would do, it would go back as if that $250,000 limit was still in place for both 18 and 19. So you could have issues there where somebody has gone back and carried those net operating losses back already because that provision was out of the law as of a year ago. And again, this just adds the complexity and processing complexity, administrative complexities for the Department of Revenue.
Okay, thank you. Senator Boquist.
Thank you. Could you, the one area we keep hearing about, I guess that we'll call it, I will call it the evil corporations, okay, just for simplicity's sake here. In the business interest deduction, that particular of the 3 points that are in this amendment, that one, that provision applies to businesses with at least $25 million in gross receipts. In your mind, who does that impact in your experience?
So you're right. That's not going to impact the the owner of your favorite Thai restaurant or your favorite Subway sandwich shop, or, you know, it's not going to affect them unless they've got a lot of restaurants. It's going to affect the multinationals, but it will also affect Main Street businesses that are providing jobs. For example, we have a client in-house that everyone on the call would recognize, no question. I would venture to guess that everyone on the call has been in one of their establishments. Closely held, Oregon business, not multinational, it would affect them because they just happen to have more than 25 million in gross receipts. So it is aimed, it does affect mostly the big multinationals to the extent that they have a lot of interest expense. It's not going to affect the local business as much. Did that help, Senator Burdick, or Senator Boquist?
Yes, it did. I mean, it is sort of the standout of the three of these. It's the one you have to be upper end of the spectrum. But again, as you just pointed out, you're saying that's gross receipts. If you're on a narrow margin business, say even running a bunch of corner stores, you could have $25 million in gross revenue and still be losing money.
Exactly. And that's part of what we're going to see is you've got a number of businesses that are low margin. I mean, your restaurants are 3 or 4%. And if a restaurant group or a corner group of corner grocery stores, as you say, has that, they don't have a lot of margin to play with. And they could be affected significantly by COVID. Plus, we still have the new commercial activity tax this year that also plays in. It's a gross receipts tax. So they owe that tax whether they're making money or not.
Okay, thank you very much. This has been helpful. Next is Jennifer Young. Jennifer Young. Calling once, calling twice. Jennifer Young. Okay, we will go back to Jennifer after we take our next couple of witnesses. Emily Sewells.
All right, I hope you can see me okay. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Emily Sewells, representing the Oregon Small Business Association. We support moving Senate Bill 137 as drafted, but we are opposed to the Dash 1 amendment. As you all know, small businesses have been hit particularly hard due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Small businesses have suffered sharp declines in revenue, with women and minority-owned businesses seeing even further revenue decline. The Oregon Small Business Development Network, along with Travel Oregon and Business Oregon, released a statewide business impact survey noting that 70% of businesses have either closed, laid off employees, or at the time of the survey believed that they would need to as a result of the pandemic. Now is not the time to adopt an additional tax increase on small business owners as proposed in the Dash 1 amendment. We believe the Dash 1 amendment prioritizes potential state budget needs over the immediate needs of struggling Oregon small businesses. Small businesses need certainty and the ability to plan ahead in order to succeed. Adopting the underlying connection to the federal code will provide some of that much needed certainty for small businesses. The Oregon Small Business Association supports moving Senate Bill 137 as drafted without the Dash 1 amendment. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. I see no questions. So Anthony Smith from NFIB.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Anthony Smith. I'm the Oregon State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business, representing thousands of small businesses across the state, many being the smallest of small businesses, with about 90% of our members in Oregon having fewer than 25 employees and 70% having fewer than 10 employees. Madam Chair, I appeared before the committee in opposition to the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 137 when it had its first public hearing on February 3rd. NFIB remains opposed to the amendments, and I won't repeat myself today. My testimony from that prior hearing can be found on OLIS, but I would like the opportunity to highlight one quick important point. two of the three provisions that have received quite a lot of attention and testimony from proponents, but I haven't heard a lot of focus on the net operating loss provision. As the CPA just mentioned, this provision has no income thresholds tied to it, and it only benefits those businesses that have suffered losses. If the state truly wants to provide targeted relief to businesses that need it most, this provision does exactly that and has the potential to provide immediate liquidity to thousands of struggling business owners, especially important for those with low to moderate levels of income and a lack of cash reserves. So again, NFIB respectfully asks that you oppose the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 137. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Yeah, thank you for giving us a sense of priority. Is it fair to say, given the previous testimony, that your membership basically would not have an effect one way or the other with the business loss, with the business interest deduction?
Madam Chair, I can't say that for certain. I think that some of my colleagues in the business lobby did a good job in the last hearing expressing some of the important reasons for those provisions. What I can tell you is that in my conversations with our members, the focus is on net operating losses.
Thank you. Are there other questions? I see no other questions. So we will give Jennifer Young another chance to show up. There you are.
Welcome. Hello. Thank you. I apologize for my technical difficulty. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in opposition to the Dash 1 amendment to SB 137. My name is Jennifer Young. I'm an Oregon CPA and a director for state and local tax with Moss Adams LLP. We are the largest CPA firm in Oregon. We represent thousands of Oregon individuals and businesses with revenues ranging from under $10 million per year to considerably higher. While our Oregon client base does include a handful of companies with over $1 billion in revenues, our practice is concentrated on the small business middle market area. The retroactive provisions of the Dash 1 amendment are aimed squarely at retroactively increasing the Oregon taxes of this very group, as the net operating loss and business loss limitations do not impact subchapter C corporations. There's been quite a bit of testimony regarding the adverse impact, tax impact SB 137 will have on our Oregon businesses. Even those persons testifying in support of this amendment are acknowledging that this will be a tax increase. As a CPA and current practitioner, I wanted to focus on the administrative burdens and the hard dollar costs that the amendment, particularly in its retroactivity, would bring to our Oregon businesses and our Oregon employers. Oregon currently has and has had for a number of years a rolling reconnect mechanism that is kind of automatically connected to the federal code. And that's conferred several benefits on Oregon taxpayers over the past years. Chief among those benefits are simplicity and predictability. So an Oregon taxpayer can start with federal taxable income or loss. It applies a limited set of well-established modifications and then can calculate its Oregon taxable income and file its Oregon returns. The Dash 1 amendment removes this simplicity and predictability and requires Oregon's businesses to maintain lists of additional Oregon-only modifications for business losses, business interest, and operating losses, and then track those as separate attributes. So they need to be set up and scheduled and then separately tracked for Oregon as those differences turn through years into the future. Additionally, the retroactive nature of the bill will require many taxpayers to file amended Oregon returns to reverse, for Oregon purposes only, the impact of federal tax laws that were approved almost unanimously to assist businesses and individuals in surviving the COVID pandemic. This imposes an administrative burden on these businesses and additional compliance costs. As was noted earlier, those are represented in increased compliance fees and tax filing costs in addition to the tax. Oregon has already issued refunds under the Oregon statutes that exist today. Some of those refunds have been, most of those refunds that I'm aware of have been for the net operating loss carryback provisions. Those did not exist after tax reform in 2017 until the CARES Act amendment. So NOL carrybacks were not allowed for a few years, and then the CARES Act opened those back up. So several of our clients have filed those carryback claims. And again, this is because they have losses that they can now carry back and monetize and invest those proceeds into their business and their payroll. If the bill passes in its current amended form, those taxpayers would be required to repay those taxes, those tax refunds that Oregon has already issued, when they may have already invested the funds into their business. So this adds layers of complexity and cost to a tax ecosystem, so to speak, that's already very complex. The Oregon, the corporate activity tax, or CAT, it's called the corporate activity tax, but it really applies not just to corporations, but to all business activities. It was effective January 1st, 2020. I have over 20 years of experience in state and local tax, and the CAT tax is unique in the United States. It is the only tax of that kind that I'm aware of. It has features of other state existing taxes, but the CAT itself is unique. That businesses now have to, you know, comply with this brand new tax. Businesses operating in the Portland metropolitan area also must comply with two new taxes, the Metro Supportive Housing Services Tax and the Multnomah County Preschool for All Tax. Those both bring new reporting requirements and reporting burdens. Even though the Multnomah County Preschool Tax is on individuals, not businesses, there will be reporting requirements that any business operating in the county will need to comply with. So in conclusion, the SB 137-1 amendment serves to retroactively increase taxes. It increases complexity both retroactively, currently and into the future, increase costs, and decreases a business's ability to efficiently operate and continue to invest in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is actually for staff. I think this was the last witness, and I was waiting for that to ask this question to staff. Senator Boquist mentioned earlier something about the kicker, and I wanted staff to weigh in on how this bill affects the kicker.
Senator Riley, Madam Chair, Chris Allenek, Legislative Revenue Office. I think the point that the senator was getting at is that if a policy change is enacted now and it increases tax collections between now and June 30th, that pushes us closer to the kicker. Because the kicker is based on a cash accounting basis calculation. So we're right now, or as of the December forecast, we were give or take $350 million away from the kicker threshold, and we have a new forecast coming out on Wednesday, and so stakeholders are just watching what that forecast is going to be, and any policy change here that increases collections in this biennium, so between now and June 30th, could push us closer to that kicker threshold.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Please do.
So. So we won't really know until we see the new forecast, and then we'll know how close we are and how likely we are this is to push us over that. Is that correct?
Correct. The next two benchmarks will be Wednesday when you get the new forecast, and then we'll have a new number for how close we are to the kicker or above it. And then the last chance will be the May forecast, which has a dual purpose. It gives us another update with only 6 weeks remaining in the biennium as to how close we are to the kicker, as well as setting the bar for the next biennium's kicker.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Boquist.
Yes, my point, Madam Chair, Senator Riley, is exactly what Senator Riley said. This is a matter of timing. Our committee does not close, and actual job receipts and jobs were increased significantly over the last quarter. It's 348 to be precise, is where the last forecast was. And so we have to be cognizant of what we're doing, that we don't drive it over the edge and we hurt ourselves in our future revenue forecasts. And the combination that the committee has looked at so far actually does that, which is what my concern is that we would be losing revenue for essential services rather than gaining. But it's a matter of timing, and Senator Riley is absolutely correct. It's a matter of doing it wisely and slowly, Madam Chair, because this committee, again, doesn't close like the rest.
That is absolutely correct, and it's also correct that we'll have the most clarity after the May forecast, although there are no guarantees since it's based on actual cash receipts. But we have to do our best to thread the needle in a sensible way. Okay, I see no other questions. So, Chris, are we? Do we have any other business that we need to take care of?
No, Madam Chair, this was the only item on your agenda for today.
Okay, so with that, we are adjourned. Thank you, committee.